Hello and welcome to the Relentless Forward Podcast. This episode of the Relentless Forward Podcast is brought to you by GI Associates. GI Associates is one of the largest and best gastroenterology clinics in the southeastern United States. If you are eligible for a colon cancer screening, which means if you're Caucasian, you're over 50, I think that might even change to 45 now. I might have to double check on that. And if you're African American, you just have to be 45, which means you are eligible to get your colonoscopy, to get a colon screening. If you have a history of cancer, colon cancer in your family, you are also eligible to get your screening. And if you are eligible and have not done it yet, you will want to do it. I have had colon cancer and colonoscopies, and I can tell you that colon cancer is worse than getting a colonoscopy. A colonoscopy is just not that bad. So if you're in the southeastern United States, or even if you're not, call 601-355-1234. Tell them that Run Strong sent you or that Jeremy sent you. If you're not in the southeastern United States, they can direct you to a gastroenterology clinic in your area so you can get your screening done. So get it done. The life you save could be your own. That's very important. This episode is also brought to you by the Vineyard Church of Flowood. Flowood is the city that we live in. It's a suburb of Jackson, Mississippi. And on October 6th, the Vineyard Church and Run Strong events are teaming up to put on a 5K that's going to raise money and raise awareness for human sex trafficking. And the amazing thing about this was that I didn't realize that this stuff happens in our own community. You know, the area we live in is really safe and nice and clean. And the fact that people are being taken and sold into, into modern day slavery was pretty shocking to me. And it has happened here. It's been in the news. It's happened all over the place. It's just a growing problem. And the Vineyard Church is deciding to do something about it. And so we're putting on this 5K called the Run Against Traffic 5K. It's on October 6th in Flowood at 8 a.m. If you would like to donate or learn more, go to RunStrongMS on Facebook. Look on the events, and the link will be there where you can either visit the Vineyard Church Facebook and you can make their website where you can make a donation, or you can sign up for the event if you're local. You can really help make an impact by donating or participating in this event. And lastly, the most exciting announcement is the Run Strong online store is called Run Strong Shop. And it's been online for a couple months, but I haven't really promoted it much to the public because I was building the product lines that I wanted to carry. And I've been pretty selective about the product lines that I carry. And one of the ones that I really wanted to get, and it's taken a while to get it done, but I'm there, is Ultra Brand Shoes. And if you haven't worn Ultra Brand Shoes, you're really missing out. They're a very unique shoe company. They have patented and really done a great job with what they call zero drop footwear. They have a wide toe box. They're just super comfortable shoes. They're great for runners. And they have great variety in what you can choose from. And so on the Run Strong Shop, you can now purchase Ultra Shoes. You can purchase Ultra Shoes on www.runstrongshop.com. If you want to buy some Ultra Shoes online, I will offer you free shipping by doing so. Just enter the word podcast when you check out, and that'll offer you free shipping on the shoes. You can pick out any pair you want, and we'll get them sent on your way. So we're really excited that Ultra has come on board with Run Strong. We also have Features brand socks, Goo, Nutrition, and some Run Strong branded gear on that website. So check out www.runstrongshop.com. I'm going to keep adding more run specialty and fitness products as I see fit. But for now, we're super excited that we are now an Ultra dealer. And you can buy those online on www.runstrongshop.com. Again, use the discount code PODCAST, all caps. That'll get you free shipping on your first pair or on two pairs. You can buy as many pairs as you want. We'll ship them to you for free. So check that out. So today's guest is my semi-co-host, Mike McElroy. Mike McElroy is a strength coach and also now golf fitness coach. Mike's a really good golfer, and he's also training golfers. You can follow him at Coach Mike McElroy on Instagram. So Mike and I talked today about battling through fatigue. What we did was we actually polled some of our clients, and one of the things that our clients wanted to hear from was how to deal with mental and physical fatigue, and how to find motivation, inspiration in the times where you're really struggling and you're feeling fatigued. So that's what we talked about today. And I think it's really informative. It's really good. Mike has a lot of deep insights on what it really takes and why you might be feeling fatigued or why you might not be feeling motivated or inspired. I think you'll really find some of his things interesting because he talks about things you probably don't think about. We think of fatigue as just being tired, but there's a lot of things that go into that with your nervous system and lifestyle and stuff. So Mike has a lot of great insights on that. He even gives some tips on how to squeeze some if you're short on time, if you struggle with time, how you should fashion your training, what kind of strength training, what kind of endurance training you can mix in on short notice. I think you'll find it pretty good. So that's it for now. Enjoy the podcast. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you soon. All right. We are live on the podcast. Mike McElroy, welcome to the podcast once again.
Glad to be here.
Are you really?
Yeah.
So I got a question for you. Have you ever eaten peanut butter in a pickle sandwich?
We didn't talk about whatever you're about to ask me. You just threw a curveball in it.
I know. I was prepared for this. I was trying to make some. I was short on time for lunch today, and I wanted a peanut butter sandwich, and I didn't have any banana. I like to put
peanut
banana.
Peanut butter and pickle, did you say? It's
peanut butter and sweet pickle sandwich. Have you ever tried that?
I don't like pickles at all.
No. Well, then so no. I'm still searching for it. I put some pickles on it today.
That's like the opposite of a carnivore diet.
I know. I needed some carbs. I really struggled today. I was tired this morning during my run.
How's your diet going? Where are you at now? I know you bumped up carbs a little bit.
I bumped up carbs. I'm still pretty... Like I said last time, last podcast, there's a really fine line between a strict, you know, fad-like diet and sticking to it and just overeating.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't stick right to your diet and you start throwing in stuff that you've been excluding, suddenly you're eating a bunch of junk that you don't need. So I have to be real careful about that. So it's been a little odd. I'll go days, 2 or 3 days with just extremely high protein, low carbs, and then all of a sudden one day I'll have a sandwich for lunch. I had a donut this morning. It's Friday, so I had a donut with my son this morning. So, but everything.
Did you run today?
Yeah, but yesterday. Oh, so yesterday, I did 3 really hard workouts yesterday, all unintentionally. They just kind of it just happened. So I did one in the morning, and then in the afternoon I wanted to go.
We're gonna get to that question about struggle if you don't have enough time.
Yeah, this is what I did.
It's the
opposite
of that.
No, it's good. I didn't have much time. I had I had 2 openings yesterday to do a workout. So I did a workout in the garage. That was my main workout. Then later in the afternoon, I thought, well, I wanted to go for a run, but I didn't have much time. So I took your advice from our Super Compensation podcast, and I went out to this hill. There's a hill not even about a half mile from my house. We call it the Cemetery Hill. And I did... If you didn't listen to the Super Compensation podcast, Mike had suggested that one thing to do, this was for a specific person, but it was a good concept, was to do, and I'm probably screwing this up, but it was basically about 4 near max effort hill repeats, but shorter durations than we normally do. So maybe he said 30 seconds. It was as steep as I could get. I got the steepest part. And then take a pretty long recovery. So he was talking 2, 3, 4 minute recoveries. So I mapped out, there's 1/10 of a mile. There's a line that's painted at the bottom of the hill. And then there's a telephone pole that's exactly 1/10 of a mile up from that line. So I went out and did it. And I did 4. And I walked down the hill back. That was my recovery. It was about 3 minutes. And the first one I did in 26 seconds. Then I did 22 seconds, 22 seconds, and 21 seconds. And it was full blast as much as I could muster. There was sweat flying everywhere. My hamstrings were screaming.
Less than 2 minutes of work.
It was really hard, but it felt pretty good. But then I it was only 1.7 miles total with a 1 mile warm up. And then I went to our training group that night, and my friend Ashley, who's a coach for my training program or has been in the past, just showed up and she decided to lead the workout. So I did the workout then too, and it was a lot of lunges, which I'm really bad at.
So are you sore today?
Yeah, I'm really sore. So when I went out for my run this morning, I was supposed to do 8 or 9 miles, and I just did 4, and I was done.
But
so I felt, I don't know if I was just sore.
Do you think you're more sore from the run, the sprints, or the lunges?
The lunges. I think I can handle the running.
What about in your core? Are you sort of off from the sprints or obliques or anything?
I think the other thing, you know, if I had run that on a track, if that had not been an incline, my hamstrings, especially my left one, has such bad range of motion that on a track, I don't think I could have. I can almost go faster going up the hill. I'm more efficient because my stride automatically shortens, and I don't.
Well, when you're sprinting on a track, you're like leaning back like you're on a hill.
Yeah, and I've worked on that. I know. So when there's actually a hill, I'm a really good runner. Yeah. So I'm a great hill runner, I guess. But so how's you been training for it? You've been training?
Mm-mm.
Nothing. Do nothing.
Nope.
You look. I mean, you're looking a little. Your body fat looks like it's about 6% now.
I haven't. Somebody told me this yesterday at our men's group that I was looking a little smaller up top. I haven't done like upper body work in like probably a month and a half.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Just no time. Haven't felt
I got plenty of time.
Well, it sounds like maybe
I'm doing a bunch of wall balls. That's about the only consistency in my program. It's Tuesday, I do a workout with wall balls.
Aerobic.
I'm trying to build volume there.
Aerobic wall balls.
I'm trying to build up to a test, which I don't know what the test is, which is a problem. but that's really the only consistency I've had in my training. Monday is some kind of strength work, usually lower body. Tuesday is some kind of running in wall balls and double unders. And then it's out the window after that.
Well, it sounds like you need to not just participate.
Today I did a 4x400 meter run with a minute rest.
Did you really?
And then some other stuff.
How did that feel?
Good. Went from 155 down to 136 or something.
So when you run 400s, what do you do for a warm-up? Do you run?
Today?
Yeah.
That's my first 400.
All right. We're going to have to talk about that.
Yeah. No, don't do what I've been doing.
Okay. Bad question. Just forget. Just ignore that Mike even said that.
I'm in a completely different area of training than I've ever been in my life right now, and I'm enjoying it. My training volume is low. My body feels good. My joints feel good. I don't have to warm up much. Like, everything feels good. Like, even if I'm squatting, I don't have to warm up for the range of motion, which normally I have to warm up for like 30 minutes. So everything feels good. I'm probably not making progress as far as fitness goes, but it's not really what I'm worried about right now.
I've had cycles in running where I do that before. I just kind of do what I feel like, and I have felt incredibly strong with that really low volume.
Yeah. I've always been very rigid in my training from, like, when I started CrossFit. You know, CrossFit prides itself on constantly varied functional movement, and, like, from pretty early on, that constantly varied didn't really sit well with me. So, like, and this was back in 2005 and 6, where, like, that's all that was out there. There wasn't any, like, well-written CrossFit programs at that time. But I got into some that were kind of well-written, and then got into a blog that was well written, and then got into a coach. And I've always had that, or I've always written my own program. Usually didn't last very long before I gave it back to somebody else to do. Just because I always had to have the structure. So like I said, this is the first time. It's been like 2 or 3 months. I don't have any of my training documented. Couldn't tell you what I've done the last 3 months. But I'm enjoying it. And like I said, my body feels good. So.
And that's, you're going to do this indefinitely, or just...
Yeah. I don't really have any goals right now. I'm focusing on coaching, the spare time that I have, being able to be home a little bit more and be on the golf course a little bit more.
I see you've been golfing a lot. You're kind of retired, you know. You sold the gym. You started going to Florida all the time, and every time I saw you, you were down at the beach.
Florida.
Wherever you're at. You're at the beach, and then you're golfing all the time. What's retirement like at a man?
It's good.
When you're age. You're late.
Good. Retirement with 3 kids under the age of 5.
Yeah, that's really good. Man. I mean, there's probably a lot of people who would like to do that.
Yeah, speaking of 5-year-olds, my son turned 5 this week.
Yeah?
And after this, we're going to set up a zip line for his party tomorrow.
Is there any particular reason I have not been invited to this?
I was waiting
to
do it live on YouTube.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And podcast.
Oh, that sounds fun. Is it the kind of zip, like, do they have to hang on to it, or? Is
yeah,
it,
y'all should come.
Does it handle adults?
I hope so.
Are you doing this for you or the kids?
The kids.
Yeah, literally. It's 20 feet off the ground. Yeah. They'll be fine. I'll just run underneath and catch them.
I told camp today it says 8 and older. Sorry, it's just for us.
Yeah, sorry, son. You're just going to have to hang onto my legs.
Yeah, y'all should come.
When is it?
Tomorrow at 4.
All right, we might have to talk about this off the air. I'll see if that works.
Yeah.
It might work.
Yeah.
Hey, look, we got invited to a party. Look at us. Well, it sounds like...
we're like 20 minutes in and haven't even talked about our topic.
I keep trying to get to the topic, but you keep changing the subject. But actually, you're talking about this subject, sort of. So for this podcast, what we did was before we started, we asked some people in my training group, you know, what topic they would like to hear us talk about. And one of the responses was from Becca, who's an athlete, both of ours. And she had talked about, you know, talking about dealing with fatigue, how to break through the mental barriers of fatigue, the physical barriers of fatigue. And I think that was really a good topic because that comes up a lot. I think I was telling Mike off the air before we started that a lot of endurance athletes struggle this time of year in the South because it's still so hot. You know, our brains think it's fall, but it's still 90 degrees out and humidity is through the roof. It's terrible. It's going to be hot for another 3 or 4 weeks at least. And so I've had seen in my group, cyclically, I see people struggle with this stuff every year about this time. Everyone starts complaining about the heat. It's usually at the beginning of the summer and at the beginning of the fall. Mm-hmm. So when Becca had said that, I thought it was a good topic. And also, you had made an Instagram post. If you don't follow Mike on Instagram, it's Coach Mike McElroy. He usually puts up pretty good stuff. But you had made a post about motivation and inspiration and, you know, we can talk about that a little bit. So I thought we could tie this all together because a little bit of battling through fatigue sometimes is whatever your motivation, whatever your inspiration is. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about that, battling through fatigue, breaking down those mental barriers of being tired, and then finding the motivation, inspiration you need to get through those things. So do you remember your Facebook post or your Instagram post, what you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically saying motivation is external. External motivation, things in the outside that motivate you. Inspiration is more from within. So stuff, something that's within you that just motivates you and drives you, things that get you going in the morning, things that you know, the big purpose and values of why you do things. Whereas motivation is like if a lion's chasing you, that's motivation to move. So not inspiration. It's once the lion's gone, you don't have to run anymore.
Here's what's super fascinating to me about this, because I read your post and agreed 100% with everything you said, but I use the two terms the opposite way.
Oh, really?
Like, to me, motivation for me is, oh, what's my motivation? Like, I have goals, I like the process, and I want to see big numbers on my or low numbers depending on my training log. Like, those are things that keep me motivated. Something might inspire me momentarily, like a song might come on. But you used it the opposite. So I think we're talking about the same thing. It's just different. Yeah.
So maybe my first description just now is better. Something that's external. I mean, a goal is still external, but like you said, a song or a motivational speech, that's something external that really doesn't play a factor, but it may get us going for the moment. Like, if we're feeling tired, that may pump us up for the moment. But things that pump us up aren't the things that are going to keep us going when stuff gets really challenging.
Right.
You get fatigued or you're trying to break through a plateau. You can't just use a song to get you through that or whatever.
Yeah, the song might get you through
one session,
one workout. Yeah, and we've talked about that with Becca before. She'll if she has to do an easy run, she'll listen to like different music or a podcast or a book. Yeah. And I do this too. But when I need to really get at it on the track, I'll put on some music that just gets me fired up. Now, whether that's motivation or inspiration, now I'm confused. But either way, they're different things.
Well, the other thing that I mentioned in that post was the external thing. Like I said, if you're feeling tired or you're feeling unmotivated or uninspired to do your training, and you get a song or you get a group of people or you get something else to kind of get you going or get you pumped up for the session, that could push you into overtraining. Because there could be a reason that you're tired and a reason you're not feeling it. And sometimes you should listen to that and not get something to motivate you and get you going. Sometimes you should go take a nap or go take a rest day instead. So that's the other area that, especially in the group fitness area, like if you always have to have that there, to me that kind of asks you to question things. Like should you need that every day, and are you pushing too hard because you have that motivation that thinks it's helping you push your limits more? Because you don't, maybe you shouldn't be pushing your limits every day.
I have always said from the time I started my run training group in 2012, I always said I want people to find momentary motivation or inspiration, whatever, momentary power in the group effect of a group workout. Mm-hmm. But overall, I want to teach them to be self-sufficient. I want them to understand why they're doing stuff, how to adjust, how to go do it on their own. So I don't want them in a group all the time.
Right.
Now, we have group workouts all the time now with our almost every day with our training group, but a lot of people have very specific plans to them. So either right. even if they show up for the group, they have to do their own thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. last night we did a group workout, and like I said, Coach Ashley showed up, and she put us through the ringer. It was a ridiculously hard workout. But there were some people that probably worked harder than they should have because right. they were part of the group and they exactly. didn't want to be the one that didn't yeah. do the workout.
Yeah. Yeah, I just left training with three or four other people who were all doing separate things. And I've said that often, and it goes hand in hand with runs, because, like, when I give intervals for CrossFit that are, you know, not just running, but wall balls, burpees, box jumps, whatever, and people say they need a group to be able to push hard enough, and my argument to that is, well, these are supposed to be sustainable. So if you get in a group, and maybe you get four rounds in the first block, and then the next time you only get 3.5, and the next round you only get 3 because you're trying to keep up with whoever in the first round,
yeah.
then you don't get the desired result anyway. So it would be better for you to be on your own and get 3.5 for all of them. So that's where the conflict of that comes in.
And it's challenging because I do almost all my work, almost all my own training is done by myself, not yeah. in a gym, just by myself. At the yeah. track by myself, on the trail by myself, in my garage by myself. And some days I know I could work harder,
mm-hmm.
but I just am not. I've turned the music up. Monty's not there for yeah. me to compete against. But I don't know if that's always. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's bad.
Yeah, and it is. And sometimes, like I said, sometimes it's bad because it pushes you over the limits. But there are times when it's needed, and there are times when it's good. Especially if you're like trying to get ready for a race, or in my case, trying to get ready for a CrossFit competition. Like, yeah, you got to push the limits, and those other factors help and are beneficial.
And that kind of goes into what Becca had mentioned with fatigue, is that, you know, sometimes with fatigue you have to, so somebody probably at my workout last night has some cumulative fatigue and just wasn't feeling good, but they probably did this workout, and ultimately the way they really felt, you know, the mental fatigue they were feeling, the physical fatigue they were feeling, they probably would not have opted to do that workout on their right. own. But how do people deal with that fatigue? What do you do when, and do you classify fatigue differently? Like mental fatigue, is that a motivational, inspirational thing? Or does that come from being physically fatigued?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. All of it. Yeah. No, there's a few different things I guess I looked at if somebody, we'll just assume that somebody has fatigue. So what are we going to look at to see how to fix that first? And then we can go a couple different areas. But if somebody says they have fatigue and they're just tired and they can't get it together, first I'm not going to look at the training plan. First I'm going to look at outside of the training plan. So their nutrition, their sleep, their work, their relationships, all that stuff that play a factor in how much they recover and their energy and all that stuff. If all that stuff's dialed in, which is a slim chance, if all that stuff's dialed in, then we can look at the training program. But if it's not, then we'll look at that stuff first. Just, and in my experience, it's not very often that the training plan is the reason they're overtrained. I think we talked about this on the last podcast with the super compensation.
I think so,
we
yeah.
touched on a little bit, but it's rare that the training program is what's causing them to be overtrained. It's they're under recovering. So that's what I'll look at first. like you mentioned mental fatigue, like again, looking at relationships, they're getting in fights with their boss all the time, or their coworkers are stressful, or you know, whatever. All those things can play a factor, which do affect your training, and you can't ignore that. And if you have something, I mean, like you can attest to this now as I can. Like if you have a job where you're completely fulfilled and you enjoy it, and you enjoy the people you interact with, like your training is going to be better.
Yeah.
And
there's no question.
There's no question. And unfortunately, most people don't have that going for them, or maybe they like their job, but it's still a long day. If you got a lawyer or a doctor, even if they enjoy it, it's still long, long days, which is taxing. So where we want to go with that, but.
Well, and you know, talking about just dealing with fatigue, but I think sometimes what can happen is the two can kind of exacerbate the other, you know? So like if you're struggling at work, you're struggling through these workouts, And it feels like you're struggling from physical fatigue, but it's probably the mental fatigue. But then it just manifests itself. Pretty soon you're struggling so much, it's so hard that you are physically struggling. Yeah. And then pretty soon you have both areas are screwed up.
And ironically, you start sleeping worse when you get to those points of being so fatigued.
Terrible.
Like you start sleeping worse, which obviously compounds itself even more.
Yeah, so you have to break that cycle and get out of it somehow.
And a lot of times, the people who get into these situations are kind of type A, you know, like hard workers, get after it type people, and the solution is stop and rest, which doesn't go well, which stresses them out even more.
There's an art to that, because I have, so I've been running for so long, and I've seen these cycles come and go, that I deal with them a lot better now. Now, if I wake up on a Saturday or Sunday morning and I was planning to do a long run and I'm just not feeling it, I can tell I'm not sleeping well, something just doesn't feel right, I just don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, because I have a big picture. That what motivates me is my big picture. I have a lot of big plans, and these little tiny things aren't going to make that. In fact, they're going to be, I know they're going to be beneficial down the road. But most people who don't have that history of training, mm-hmm. can only look, they look at a missed workout or a rest day as a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know, Becca, you're probably going to listen to this. And we talked about Becca before. I think she's been on the podcast. Yeah. She didn't make the cut. Bad audio. But
bad audio.
Becca gets mentioned a lot because we both work with Becca now. We both worked with her in the past. And she's an interesting athlete because she's done a lot of different types of things and been really, really
excelled
at both of them. But she had about 3 weeks in her training log where she just had mentioned kind of offhand that one time her knees were hurting, another time she just struggled, and one time she just felt like she was sweating too much, just fatigue. And I really just, you could see the cumulative fatigue building up. Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's stress at work or if it's just literally the fatigue from everything she's been doing, but I gave her 2 extra days off, which meant she had 3 days in a row where I just told her, if you do anything, just go for a walk. That's about it. And she almost took it personally initially because she thought that maybe she was doing something wrong or the training wasn't going well. And I just said, no, this is a good thing. Like, it just means you have to let your body recover and adapt. And when you come out of it, you're going to be stronger. It's kind of a super compensation.
Yeah.
You know, writ large, we're just making it actually take place.
Yeah. And that's where I think a simple plug for both of us is I think a coach is massively important because, one, they can look at it with an unbiased opinion. I mean, you may not even notice that you're making those comments 3 times a week. You may not even pick up on it. And two, if you do, your mindset is most likely going to be to toughen up and quit doing it. Or you'll go on the other side of things and you might have like a little sore quad and say, oh, I shouldn't run today at all. And it's like, well, let's try to fight through it one time. So, but you know her as a person, so you know if she's saying something, it means something. She's not going to just say something for the sake of it.
Right.
Whereas another athlete, you may see those comments and be like, yeah, you're fine. Keep going.
Yeah.
So that's where the coach can look at it and be like, and know whether or not you need to take a rest day or push through it or maybe break through with a super compensation model that we talked about last time on the other end of the spectrum. Like instead of giving Becca 3 days rest, maybe you give her a 20-mile run. Depending on the person, but you know, I mean, that's where our coach is valuable, is because they can look at it from an unbiased opinion. Do you look at, you don't track resting heart rate or anything with any of your athletes?
No.
I asked Becca about that the other day because that's something we look at a little bit is resting heart rate with some of my higher end athletes of either resting heart rate and or HRV. Are you familiar with
that? I've gotten into it recently. I'm not super familiar with it, but I had a client ask me about it about 2 weeks ago.
Heart rate variability. So it's basically looking at how recovered you are. So it's looking at how much into the parasympathetic system you are. So you got parasympathetic, which is a rest and relaxed state, and sympathetic, which is your fight or flight state, basically. And the less variety in your heart rate, your beats, if you're looking at it on the little chart, the less variety it is, the more sympathetic you are, which means you're not recovering. So you're sympathetic when you're running, when you're lifting weights, you know, fight or flight. You should be parasympathetic when you're sleeping, getting ready to eat food, which is why we talk about slowing down and chewing your food.
not this again.
And breathing. But we should, so HRV, they have some different apps for it and stuff, but another way you can do it is just your resting heart rate. Like her resting heart rate, if its average is around, I think she said it's pretty low. It's like 41, 42 or something.
It's low.
But if you see that and all of a sudden for 2 weeks in a row it's like 47, like that's an issue. That's a sign of her being overtrained and not being able to recover. So that's another thing that I look at with, like I said, with higher level people who will track it and do it, because it's got to be consistent. It's not a one-day thing. Like if it's 47 one day, you don't really know much from that, especially if you don't know that it was 42.
Right.
So it's got to be something that's tracked constantly to see trends over time, to see if somebody really is overtrained, which was interesting. I got really sick last week. There goes that. Oh, our YouTube just shut off.
Our YouTube shut off. I guess maybe we got shut down. We're too boring.
I track HRV. And ironically, when I got sick last week, like normally, like I said, my training's feeling great right now. I'm not training too much, recovering really well. I've been like 85% and above on recovery. Like it gives you a percentage of how much you're recovered, the one that I have.
Oh, okay.
When I got sick, like the day before, I started feeling it. And then like the next 3 days, it was like 23%. And my training hadn't changed. Like my body still felt okay.
Oh, yeah.
But it knew that I was getting sick and I was fighting something.
That's crazy.
So
I have a similar note. I have these, my watch is a Garmin Fenix 5 and it has training status. I got something in my eye today. It has training status, and I was talking about this with Denise, who's a client of mine, but the training stat, I've watched it through my own training, and it'll tell me when I'm overreaching, when I'm under-training, or detraining, unproductive, and it'll just basically just says fitness down, load up, load down, fitness up.
Do you have any idea what it's based off of?
I assume, it's got to be something to do with heart rate, yeah. And I would assume, it's got some algorithms in it about how you performed in the past, obviously.
Yeah.
I've been maintaining fitness for the last 2 or 3 weeks, which was just fitness was straight across and load was generally down. Mm. And then, I've started manipulating it where if I rest a little while and then go out and do one short, fast run, it'll say improving, and then it'll say peaking. And every time it does that, I genuinely feel it's really, in other words, it's really accurate. It basically tells me how I feel. So I did this hard workout yesterday, went out for my run this morning. Before that, it was maintaining. And right after that workout, before I got done, it said unproductive. And it said fitness down and load is across. So my load has stayed steady, but my fitness has gone down.
Yeah.
And so just that very thing, it's wildly – at first I always thought it didn't know what it was talking about.
Right.
Because some days I'd go out for a long
– that's kind of how it was with this. Until that sickness thing, I was like –
that's right. It knew it sees it coming. And so, like, when I did my 100-mile week, it, of course, just its mind was blown. It didn't know what was happening. So by day two, it was
– abort.
Yeah, abort. So it was terrible. It kept saying overreaching. But then, because I think I was – I was running at the same pace or slower, and my heart rate was probably quite a bit higher.
Yeah.
But then after that, the next –
heart rate was probably staying higher all week.
Yeah, probably all through resting and everything. Yeah. So it probably takes that all into account. But I – did that for Denise, one of my athletes. She has the same watch. So I just started plugging in a couple rest days for her. She's been training really hard. And she texted the other night and said, my watch says I'm peaking. She has a race in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so then it was good because it proved that the rest actually worked.
Yeah.
It was bad because it told her she was peaking and she thought it was too early. She said, is it too early? Am I going to? I said, no, you're fine.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is don't go out and start doing this yet. Talk to one of us. Because if you're the wrong person, it can really screw with your head.
It can.
I've had people do. I'm like, you got to take that off. Like, quit wearing it. Like, you're fine. Just go train. Let me handle the other stuff. So, yeah, you can look at it, but take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, so I guess, we haven't really come to any conclusions about how people are supposed to deal with all this stuff. A little bit, although they just have to keep an eye on it. And sometimes, one of the challenging things is what you alluded to a minute ago, which is knowing what is true fatigue and what is just, just something that, like, what can you push through and should you push through and what should you not push through? And the HRV, your resting heart rate, that might give you some insight in how to make that decision.
It should be insight, and that's all it should ever be, is insights, because you should always go you should always know your body more than some electronic thing should. So you should always look at the electronic thing as confirmation. So, like, I try to think about how I feel and then look at it to see what it says. So I don't let this say, oh, it's 23%. Oh, it's going to be a bad day today.
Right. Like, this. So these watches also have a, I can't remember exactly what it says, but it's performance. It's in training performance, like your performance for that day.
Yeah. Prediction?
Well, so while you're running, it'll say performance condition, and it'll give you a number. So, like, zero is just baseline. So if it says you're basically performing the way you always are, okay, you're fine. If you're feeling, but if it thinks you're doing good, if your pace is faster and your heart rate's a little lower or whatever, it'll say performance condition plus one, plus two. I've had it as high as, like, plus six, seven, eight, something like that. But a lot of times, like this morning, it was minus four. Like, it knew, and it usually waits about, mine comes on about 0.6 of a mile, so, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes into a run. And it said performance condition negative four. Now, there are days it has given me a negative number to start, but,
feeling good.
Well, I end up feeling good. One of the reasons is if I leave to the left of my neighborhood, it's up a hill. If I leave to the right, it's down a hill.
Yeah.
And it's generally if I leave to the left, my performance condition is lower. But either way, so one day, I always thought it was a little silly, but one day last year, I did a 16-mile run. I did 13 miles, and I stopped at Stinky Pete Athletics, the store I worked at the time, because they have a water spigot out front, and I needed some water. So I was 13 miles in. I was feeling really bad. I had kidney stones at the time. I was urinating blood. Like, it was just, it was one of those times.
One of those times where you should have listened to your body.
I should have. I ended up listening. But I filled up with water, and I accidentally saved my run. I probably told you this before. So I took off. Now, the lowest number I've ever seen in a performance condition is maybe negative four, maybe negative five. So I had to restart my watch, so it gave me another performance condition. It was negative 16. I got about half of, I had 3 miles to go. Yeah, it was like red alert. You're in terrible shape. Why are you still moving? But I had to get home, and I didn't feel quite that bad. It's just that my heart rate had crept up, and I was moving so slowly.
When I thought you were starting, your heart rate's probably already at 160.
Yeah, my heart rate was out of control. So, you know, you can't just, I did feel bad. It was right, but yeah. I couldn't, I, like, maybe I should have stopped. I don't know. So you can go around in circles with these. But, so that's motivation and inspiration. You know, one of the things I was thinking about with motivation was, I try to find things, you know, we describe these differently, but one of the ways I stay motivated for things is I actively seek out things that I know will motivate me.
Mm-hmm.
So I seek out different goals. I've got a bunch of goals written on my board here, but I seek out different goals. I have, you know, racing goals. I have training goals. And those are the things that keep me, the big picture stuff that really keep me motivated. And I think if people search for those things, you know, you have to search to find your inspiration or your motivation.
Yeah.
You can't just let it, you can't just, you know, hope that someday you're going to come across a public speaker to get you fired up.
Right.
You have to kind of proactively pursue finding the things that will, you know, stoke your fire and get you fired up.
Yeah.
Even if that's a group, like if you're a runner, if it's joining a training group, if it's hiring a coach, you know, if those things got to keep you motivated. But this is an active thing. People tend to look at this motivation, inspiration as something that kind of happens to them.
Yeah.
Versus you have to make it happen,
yeah.
I think.
And you're inspired or motivated, however we want to say it. We should figure out how to clear that up.
There'd be a new word for that.
goals. But not everybody is. That doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah.
And so you don't need to force goals if that's not your thing. So you got to, like you said, you got to figure out what it is for you that keeps you going and keeps and gets you running or gets you doing your training or whatever it is to get you going and like you said, pursue that. I lost my train of thought. It's going somewhere.
But even, you know, some of the things I do.
Did you already pull up some broken?
No, did I say unbroken? That's why I want to do that. That's a goal.
Sorry. Sidetrack.
I can do like 20 some. Is that pretty good?
Yeah.
I've been working really hard on that. Mike is looking at my big board with my goals.
Sorry, we're going to get sidetracked.
That's a September goal. I haven't got that yet.
Back to what we were talking about. One of the other things I would question, you know, we talked about looking outside of your training, so looking at lifestyle stuff, sleep, relationships, all that kind of stuff. The other thing that I would question is, is your training from the perspective of, is it really what you want to do? So a lot of times people come and they're training for certain things in CrossFit because that's what the class is doing. They see other people doing it, or they get ready for a marathon that a group of their friends is doing, but they don't really want to do it. They signed up for it because everybody else signed up for it. So is the training really something that you enjoy? And don't be afraid to say no that it's not and go do something else. Actually, Reagan and I both are doing something that we've never done before right now. She's actually doing a boot camp, and I'm doing whatever I'm doing, which is who knows what.
Golfing. I'm golfing.
Well, I've done that before. So, but, I mean, we're both doing stuff that's kind of unknown, and we just changed it, and it's just a time period right now. We don't know what it's going to take, but, like, we're known as CrossFitters, but if you want to change that, like, if it's not your thing anymore, then be okay with that.
Yeah, and if you were motivated to do something once and you thought you were going to really love it and you end up not loving it, you don't have to force your way.
Because if you're always having to find, that's another sign, if you're always having to find these motivations, well, either you're overtraining or you don't really want to do this thing.
Right. You're just doing it for other people, other circumstances.
So that's the other thing I would question. If somebody's all constantly coming to me, well, all right, what's my motivation this month, coach? Like, well, why are you needing all this motivation? This should be something that you just want to do.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of times people will pick a goal based on an ulterior concept. So people sign up for a marathon to try to lose weight. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. It might make an effect on so one way or the other, but chances are it's like training for a marathon is not a good weight loss technique.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're long term, I think you could get to where you could use your fitness level and your ability to manipulate your own fitness to tie in with a nutrition program where you could manipulate that and handle it. But for the most part, if you're just like a 5K runner and you decide to do a half and you want to lose weight because of it, it's not gonna.
No, I talked about this with a client yesterday. Like I have so many people that join that I see join a CrossFit gym or a group gym or a running program with the goal to lose weight, and they look up a year later and they haven't changed.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, it's just not a good reason to do that. There's other ways to get that goal accomplished that are more successful.
Yeah, and so you have to make sure that your aligning with what you. Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one to talk about. So let's see how far are we at. So, what else do we have on motivation and inspiration? We talk about battling fatigue and all that.
I mean, I guess we didn't really address the concept of. You do have all the outside stuff lined up. You are training for the right reason. Your training program is just getting challenging. We didn't really talk about that, like the actuality of fighting physical fatigue through physical training.
Oh, yeah.
That's a challenge. Obviously, the program probably needs to be adjusted. You can focus on recovery a little bit more, but like if you're a borderline professional athlete,
like me.
Yeah, borderline. Either
it's a vague border.
Like Holly, CrossFit girl that I coach, she trains like 4 hours a day. I'm not sure about Becca's sister Laura, like how much she trains a day. Back maybe not now, but when she was really training hard. Like when you're those people, like you should possibly be needing to get body work done once a week and cryotherapy once a week and things like that. But if you're an amateur athlete, like you shouldn't need any of that stuff. So if you are feeling like you need that and you're seeing these other people, they're professionals or borderline professionals doing it. So you're asking, should I be doing that too? I would say no, you need to look at the other things first and your training program. So you shouldn't need to go to the massage therapist once a week if you're an amateur runner. Should you need it every now and then? Yeah, but
yeah, you probably don't need to, although if you'd like to and it makes you feel better, then that's fine. But you shouldn't ever get to a point where you're like, if I don't do this, I cannot continue my training.
Right.
Or I'm not going to be able to accomplish my goals. But I have people that go to the cryo spa. They get massages quite a bit. But I think it just helps them a lot. And sometimes, you know, the training volume that a lot of these people are doing is a lot for
It is a lot also when you consider what else they're doing, like I said, with work and stuff, because those professional athletes aren't doing that stuff.
Yeah, they're not working.
So, it is a lot. The other thing, excuse me, kind of with, kind of like the best program for you is the one that you enjoy the most. That's kind of how recovery modalities work as well. Ice bath, cryotherapy, massage therapy. I mean, yes, there's some science to say why those things work, but a lot of it is the one that you enjoy the most.
I agree. And, you know, not even
the placebo
speaking
effect.
Of,
sorry, I was trying to think of the word. It's basically, the placebo is they work, but it's because you think they work.
And that applies, I think, even in training. So a number of my athletes, some athletes, they just, there's things they like to do that, well, for example, I have two, this Bobby and Denise that are training, they're both training for the Ryanman half Ironman, which is coming up in about three and a half weeks. And I had scheduled them both with very specific trainer work on their bike for Saturday, or a bike ride for Saturday. But the race is doing a preview ride, so they're doing the 56-mile ride. They're just casual. They're going to probably have some water stops. I don't know what it all entails, but they really want to do that. Now, that's not the ideal, like, yeah. If I looked at the program, that's not exactly what I wanted them to do. But the benefits of them doing something they enjoy with friends,
yeah,
is probably going to outweigh them sitting in their garage struggling through an hour and a half trainer workout.
Exactly.
And I think that's, like, I have no idea if cold baths, I still can't determine if they really do anything or if I just really like them.
Yeah.
And so I just keep water in the bathtub, in this steel tub, all week long. And just this morning after my run, I just got on my phone. I went and I just stood in the bathtub with my clothes on, my feet in the cold water, because I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it really works. Maybe it does. I usually sit in it, but I enjoy it. It makes me feel better, and it makes me feel like I'm taking some control. And I don't know. I don't know if it's actually a thing or not. But
you do always do it right after your run?
I generally will. Not right after.
I was going to say, there's actually some science that says that hurts.
So what I usually do is, for about an hour after most runs, unless I'm in a big hurry, I'll work outside. I'll just do something where I just let everything calm down. Then I actually take a hot shower. Then I'll maybe eat something. And then an hour or two later, I might just go sit in the tub. I might sit in the tub at 3 in the afternoon or 8 p.m. It just depends on
what
I'm
doing. Come to the dining house, don't just walk in.
Don't just walk in. I might be sitting in the tub. So I like that. That's kind of how to deal with fatigue. And the other thing is, if, you know, just because you're, for runners especially, runners are real obsessive about, and this is probably a little different than, say, CrossFit maybe, in that running, you are literally doing the same thing every single day, day in and day out. You might do it at a slightly different intensity, but like we've talked about before, the variations of intensity in running aren't even that wild.
Right.
Like, you think you're running a lot harder, you're not.
I can show you a lot more.
Yeah. So it's not that different. So you're kind of doing the same thing over and over, and you have to start to learn to really, you really know if you're honest with yourself when you're so fatigued that it just doesn't feel right and you feel like you need a rest. Or if something is an ache and a pain versus an injury. Like, you can tell generally when something's an injury, and you can tell when it's an ache and a pain. So in some cases, like Mike said earlier, you just got to toughen up a little bit.
Yeah.
In other cases, don't toughen up.
Yeah.
But having a coach helps you figure that out.
Yeah. If you're having an ache and a pain that lasts for 2 months, you should probably
check that out.
Slow down a little bit.
I should probably do that with my Achilles tendonitis that I've had for 8 years, but it's getting better, I think. So one of the other requests we had for, and if you have any more questions about coaching, fatigue, anything like this, you can send me or Mike a message on Facebook or on Instagram. But one of the other requests we had was from actually a member of our training group. And I know this is Kevin Williamson, if you're listening, this one's for you. Kevin recently moved from Jackson up to Memphis. He's a resident, and I don't know what he's doing, some kind of doctory thing. He's smart. So he's limited on time, and he likes to do strength training. He likes to run. So he was wondering about, his question was, you know, how to deal with when you struggle with limited time.
If he wasn't smart, people wouldn't need him as much.
Yeah. So
have more time.
Yeah, like us. Yeah. People. That's why we have time to sit here and record a podcast. We're not very smart. That's not a good advertisement for the podcast.
All the people that are listening have time. So
they have time either. So it's just perpetuating. We're just perpetuating the cycle. So all you people that are listening, we just called you not smart.
Do you have any idea like what his schedule is like? Like is he?
I assume he's basically working all day long as a, I don't know what you call it, he's a resident. So he's following doctors around all day long.
Yeah.
And then I assume at night he's studying. And we pick on him because he moved into basically a retirement community. He's 35 years old, but he found an apartment in a retirement community in Memphis. So he's probably eating dinner at like 4 p.m. You know, getting up at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. But I know Kevin, and he's training for a half marathon. I gave him a half marathon training plan, but he likes to do strength training and wants to do it. So, you know, what he said was, you know, how do you deal with, so if you have limited time to do specifically strength training or running even in general, what do you focus on and what do you do when you just have super limited time?
Yeah. I'll address the strength side. I'll let you address the running side, but from a strength standpoint, and this is especially if your goal is running, so your goal is marathon, with both of them, I don't know what you're going to say about running, but with both of them, you want to focus on the minimum effective dose. So what's the least you can do to get the best bang for your buck? So from a strength world, you know, you can get a lot, especially if you're a runner, by just going in, feeling something heavy, and getting out. So that could be as simple as going in, building up to a heavy set of five on back squat, and get out. Going in, building up to a heavy set of five on deadlift, and get out. And if you're doing that paired with running, because the goal is running, so you're trying to get just strong enough to maintain your strength for your runs. So you're not trying to put on, you're not trying to get to a 400-pound back squat or trying to put on leg size or anything like that. You're just trying to maintain tension, basically. And even for non-runners, somebody like me, like that's essentially what my strength work looks like right now, just because my training volume is so high, I can't go ahead and do a ton of sets anyway. It beats me up. So like just building up to a heavy set, we've talked about this with running or training in general before, people oftentimes think they need to do more than they actually need to do. And so going in, if you want to do full body, that could be as simple as going in and building up to a tough set of five on back squat, building up to a tough set of five on bench press, and building up to a tough five pull up. And that's push, pull, and maybe a core exercise, and get out of there. And you can do that in 45 minutes.
And would you recommend doing that multiple times in a week?
Yeah, twice a week. If you wanted, you could do full body both times. So like a squat, a push, a pull. And that could be, like I said, squat, bench press, and pull up one day. And then it could be a squat, could be a lunge, still a squat variation, a lunge, a dip, and a horizontal row, which is under pull. With a core piece on the front, on the back end of both those. So it gives you 2 days, a little bit of variety in there, different planes of movements, and you're feeling some heavy weight and getting out.
So if you say build up to like a 5-rep back squat, heavy mm-hmm. back squat or a 5-rep bench, what do you mean by build up? Explain that.
So let's say I go in and do this. My max back squat right now probably is, I don't know, 375 or something.
It's a humble brag.
Well, right now, it may not even be that right now. I have no idea. But let's say somebody who squats 375 is going in to do this. Go in and build up to a heavy set of five. So I may go in, do a quick warm-up, put 135 on there, do it for 5 to 7 reps, put 225 on there, 5 to 7 reps, 275 for 5 reps, and 315 for 5 reps, and then stop.
Okay, so just sets. Whatever. So there's nothing real, like if he's doing bench, I mean, just something, so 5, 6, 7 reps, 2 or 3 times, and then jump up to the, and then.
Yeah, it should be a fairly quick, like 10, 15 minutes max. Like basically changing out the weights is your rest period in between your sets. If you watch me did a strength session, which I do on Monday, like that's pretty much what it is. I pick a movement and I start building up and I spend about 15 minutes building up to a heavy 3 to 5 rep and then I move on to the next thing.
So
and it should be strictly off feel, like don't put too much thought into it of like you could even depending on how novice he is to strength training, if somebody's brand new to it, they could do a heavy set of 5 on squat for the next 12 weeks and build in weight every time. Now, if they're more advanced, if it's somebody like me, then I change the movement every week so that there's variety. I don't have any head stuff with the number. Because last week I did 315 on back squat. This week I'm doing a sumo deadlift, and the number is not connected to what I did last week anyway. Sure. So I just you go off feel and what's heavy, whatever's heavy for that day. If you're tired, then it's going to be less. If you feel great, then it's going to be heavier.
That's good.
If you think about strength training is all about the nervous system and circuitry and being able to fire your muscles. So the number doesn't really matter as much if your goal is not strength. The goal is running. So you just need to load your nervous system with something heavy and then move on.
Right. That makes sense. So for running, I think he was more concerned about strength training because I think he's already got the running kind of involved. But, you know, if you're limited on time with running, I always go back to what Jack Daniel said when actually you and I went to his coaching clinic, and I heard him say this before, but he kind of talked about after 30 minutes, it's all – after 30 mm-hmm. minutes of mm-hmm. easy running, it's all diminishing returns anyway. So really a 40-minute run isn't much different than a 50-minute. A 30-minute run isn't any worse really than a 40-minute run.
Yeah.
Now it is, but you're getting less after it. So I've always kind of tried to tell people if you're trying to build aerobic volume for a half, a full might, you might want some more volume in it. But for the most part, if you can just get out there and get 30 minutes of aerobic activity, and you're going to get a pretty big benefit out of it. You know, for most people, that's going to be 2-3. Yeah, you did it, training for a half. But so if you can just get 30 minutes, and most people can find 30 minutes to throw on a pair of shorts and shoes and just get out the door. And you don't have to work hard all the time. If we talked about this with earning the right.
Yeah, I would definitely focus on lower intensity.
I would, in fact, if you're really short on time, I would almost rarely do anything but aerobic work.
Yeah, because that means the rest of your life is stressful. So adding another, that's
right.
The way I'm looking at it, is that you're just adding another hard stress to the system.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at it as quality, because if people like that can't, you know, if they try to work really hard, they're not even going to be able to work for 30 minutes. They're going to be able to work for 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Yeah. He's obviously that prime example of what we mentioned earlier. He's obviously type A, like very driven. He's a doctor. He wants to train for a marathon. Like only a select few people want to do that.
Yeah. Don't get a big head, Kevin.
And so the advice of doing less in your strength work and going easy on your runs is going to be challenging, but otherwise you're just going to drive yourself into a bigger hole, and you may not realize that until 10, 15 years down the road, that you dug yourself into such a massive hole that you wrecked your hormones that propel you into a mess later on.
I could see that, yeah.
Which and I'll let you get into the science of that since you're a doctor. So.
Yeah, the doctor can figure that out. But yeah, I do agree. I think that and for people to start adding intensity, high intensity stuff to their workout, I've never found a really good way to say this. You've said it before, but you kind of have to earn the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to prove that you have the aerobic base to do it, or the physiological capabilities to do it and recover.
Yeah.
You kind of have to prove that mentally you can approach it in the right way and understand the purpose of what you're trying to do. And you can't let it just screw up your mind. You don't need to go out there and try to prove that you're a champion in training. You know, a lot of people just want to go train hard so they can look at my training. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
So you kind of have to earn the right. You don't have to. You can do whatever you want. But if I'm coaching you, you kind of have to earn the right to do that stuff. And you have to earn the right by just going out and learning to just go aerobic, to go easy, in shorter durations, build up to longer until you get more volume, and then you can start working in some higher intensity stuff.
Yeah. Something else, which this may be a totally different topic, but in order to make progress on something, whether that's strength or conditioning, in order to make progress, two things. You have to be fresh enough to be able to cause stress to the body. So mm-hmm. if you're completely overworked, you've been working 12-hour shifts for 12 nights in a row, you're not even in a state where you can give stress to the body to get a response. That's one thing to think about. But the other thing is, if you are in a state where you can give stress to the body, you have to be in a state where you can recover from the stress that you gave. So something else I would think about is when you do your strength training, we talked about sympathetic and parasympathetic states earlier. If you do your strength training, which is obviously getting you sympathetic, And then you go straight to he didn't say you're an ER doctor, but we'll just use that. I just use that extreme example. And you go straight to an ER shift where you got crazy stuff happening at your work. You're never recovering from that strength training session that you did. So I would try to organize your training where you do training and you don't go straight into a stressful work. Now, if your work's not that stressful, then don't worry about it. But if it's a highly stressful situation, I wouldn't go straight from there straight into that, because you're just staying sympathetic and never recovering from the work you put in.
Yeah, so I really like that advice, because I think I kind of default I've defaulted to kind of doing that stuff. I almost, a lot of times I kind of, before I run in the mornings, I almost subconsciously just set an atmosphere for myself for what I have to do. So if I'm going to go to the track and I'm going to do work pretty hard, I kind of get, it's like before going into a football game in high school, I get kind of fired up. I'll turn on some music. I kind of get myself motivated. I kind of switch that. I turn that switch on. But if I'm going out for an easy run, I don't put on like some heavy metal music, start headbanging, and then go out and casually run.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to a podcast. I listen to a book, something like that. So I think you know, maybe on a not as big of a scale as you were talking about, but you can set your own. You can set yourself up for these things. And like you talk about all the time, is you. You're supposed to sit down and eat your food, chew it 18 million times, and not have the TV on a war movie, which I think is I pick on you about it, but I think it's really good advice, and I think that goes the same for training. You know, you kind of have to set yourself up. If you're really in a hurry and you've only got 30 minutes, don't go out and try to do like maybe 3 mile repeats with 20 burpees at the end of it.
And in fact, that really is a note that should be noted for everybody that we're talking about fighting fatigue and stuff. Think about your trainings and what you're doing after your training. Are you finishing your training and not doing any kind of cool down and jumping straight into your car and getting into a chaotic meeting with your boss or whatever, going into straight up stressful situations, and you're not recovering? It's not just about getting a protein shake in. That's, I don't know if you think that's where I'm coming from as a meathead, but in fact, I would say you don't need a protein shake or whatever, a meal, until you've calmed down, because you're not going to digest the food anyway. So think about that with your training too. If you're fighting fatigue, what you're doing right after your training, are you ever calming down and cooling down from your training?
Yes, and so a lot of times, if I have a meeting at 10 or 10:30 in the morning, and I have to have something prepared for it. If I try to go get, even if it's an easy run, if I try to go get an easy run in and then do the work I have to do to prepare for that meeting, my run is generally worse. Then if I just get that work done, because I can't stop thinking about it, if I get that work done before I go out, all I have to do, then I'm ready. All I have to do is get my run in, go to my meeting. I have time to recover and relax. So because it's a stressor, and I wish I could journal this, because it has a direct impact on how well my run goes.
I wish you could track, too, how well you recover from it. Because if you did that run and you went straight into your stressful work, you only had 30 minutes now before the meeting.
Yeah.
I bet you don't recover from that run. That's what I'm saying, is you don't recover from that run either.
Probably not. Yeah.
You're not getting the results from the run because it's not as quality, and you're not recovering. So it's a double.
And I'm not, I'm not doing my recovery routine, which I like, which is going to change my parasympathetic, how I respond, I guess. Yeah. See, I'm learning. I'm not a doctor. I'm learning. But if I like to sit in my cold bath, that's my recovery. It's probably just as much mental as it is physical.
Yeah.
Well, we've gone 57 minutes.
Is it the longest?
It's probably the longest, and I still have to tack an intro on here. So we better run. But before we do the next podcast, or Mike comes on, we will. I'm not going to run today anymore. I'm taking the rest of the day off from running. But before we get to the next podcast, we'll put out on our social media some requests for what you guys want to hear us talk about. If you have any questions about this, you can let us know. You got anything else?
Nope. Anybody knows how to get YouTube to last longer than... Oh, I bet you didn't change the setting. There's a setting on it. It has to go longer than 30 minutes.
Okay. Well, we just solved the YouTube problem right now. So hopefully. But you can go to YouTube. Go to YouTube channel. Jeremy Jolly. That's it. All right. Thanks for listening. Got to run.